Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another exciting show with Women United. And today we're going to do things just a little bit different. What we're going to do today is just kind of take a look at some of the positives that we can come up with. So, if you have a positive, give us a call in here now, and we're at 347-215-8717, and we will wait for your call on positive. Anybody out there have a positive? We'll start out with you now. And I guess I can take a look at the first positive. And what we're going to look at is just trying to just think about what's going right. Well, we'll start with some of the basics, food, shelter, and clothing. And we know that that is a struggle for some people. But most people do have something called food, shelter, clothing. And in America, what we could say is transportation-wise, what are we looking at there? What are we looking at? Is it a positive that the gasoline is like really, really, really down? We haven't had gas this cheap since. Oh, my goodness. Probably in the 70s. And so gasoline is really, really inexpensive, but What does that actually mean if the gasoline is really, really inexpensive? And at what cost and to whom? So we're getting that. A lot of people are having a lot of problems, but what are some of the solutions to these problems? We've got to hear from you. So give us a call in at 347-215-8717, and let's talk about it. Okay. Call in. One of the last things that I'm thinking of right now is for those who are healthy, we do have something called health and some health care. Right now, most people do have that. And before we go on with some of the solutions to some of our issues, we're going to just kind of talk about what are some of the problems and issues. And then we're going to talk about solutions to those problems and issues, okay? All right, we have on here our roving reporter and Miss Mississippi.
Yes, hello. Hi everyone.
Rundown.
Hi everyone.
Okay.
I am so glad to be on today. Now let me get right on into our hot topics. I'm going to give you three. And you know, I love to give you news that's just really mind-boggling. Okay, we have a young lady that was killed, and I'm sorry, I don't have my notes because I'm traveling in my car. And she was killed, but the story is all over Facebook. You can go to Dorothy Dunning, D-U-N-N-I-N-G. It's on my Facebook page. This story everyone is talking about, this young lady, her brother is a prominent politician. This young lady had three kids. She went out to the nightclub, a nice weekend, how you don't work law through the week hard. She went out to a club to have her a couple of drinks. A young man, well, an older gentleman, because the young lady was 29, the gentleman was 41, walked up to the lady and asked her for a dance, and he replied that he was interested in her. She told him no, she was not interested. She did not want to dance or whatever. The man followed her when she got ready to leave outside again and asked her again. She said no. He tucked the gun and raised it and put it in her chest and pulled the trigger, all because she did not want to go out with him. And to me, that is a very sad case. The young lady had a 9-year-old son, and she had a set of twin girls that was 3 years old. And she lost her life because some silly black guy, I hate to say it like that because I'm black myself, and he blew her chest away, all because she refused. She didn't want nothing to do with him. That's very heartbreaking.
Because she didn't want to dance with him? You think that might be it? Or when you talk about her brother being a prominent politician, it could have been one of those other deals, too, that I'm going to take some of your family member out. You just don't ever know.
You absolutely correct. And then now let me give you another hot story. We got one up here in Poplarville, Mississippi. Now, these are rednecks up in Poplarville, Mississippi. You can't get no country in Poplarville. They have a gun shop. And, you know, this is a good story for white people who always hollering about guns. They want more guns. They want more guns. Well, this young man went, took his gun to the gun shop. He's 25 years old. All these people I'm talking about is white. He had a gun that he wanted fixed. He took it to the shop. They said they couldn't fix the gun. He got so angry, the lady told him he had a surcharge of $25. He did not want to pay the surcharge. He went back and got his father, and they came back. They began to argue in the gun shop. The lady called her husband, and he came down with his son, and they began to argue in the gun shop. Now, listen at this, y'all. It was like, okay, corral. Two fathers and the two sons had a bang-bang shoot-up. The man that owned the shop, him and his son, he was 51. His son was 29. He was killed, and his son was killed. The man that came in there, him and his son, that didn't want to pay the $25 surcharge fee, he's in New Orleans. They life flight him to New Orleans, and they life flight his son to Mobile, Alabama. But now these are the white folks that's so gun-ho on by bring more guns in, bring more guns in. Now, you know, I believe now if you got a gun in your home, it's okay you to protect yourself. But I'm not going to get out and just advocate for more laws relaxed to get more guns. Now, that's not me. But now all these people, and even the other man, he may die. Even his son may die. I mean, they had a horrible shootout, over $25. Rednecks now, rednecks who always hollering about more guns. Now, I bet you they not hollering about more guns today. So a lot of people are saying that the wife was wrong for calling the husband over. No, the wife is not wrong. If you got a dispute at your shop and your husband is the primary owner, she's saying that he had to pay the $25 before he get his gun. And so the lady calls her husband. So I don't see anything wrong with that now. So now that's what everybody's saying, she shouldn't have done it. So she should have, because the husband is the original owner. But why did the rednecks come in and shoot up like that? So that's what I'm just saying. Think about all these more guns the rednecks want. So I said, let them have all the guns they want. They killing up each other over $25 in Poplarville, Mississippi. That is the talk of the town, the coast. So, to me.
Well, hindsight is always better. Hindsight is better. And if, in fact, you have someone that has some of your property, and it just depends on what the arrangements were, she should have called her husband. I don't see anything wrong with that, because she didn't, why should she be there by herself dealing with that? So, that being said, here again, I always read other things into situations. This sounds like a family feud they've had, like the Hatfields and McCoy. It sounds like a feud they've had for some other situations and times, because
okay, you it know seems what? Like, I hadn't thought about it like that. You know what? You may be right.
It just seems like some other things are going on with these people, other than just like, I don't want to pay this $25. But I know if the woman had known she was going to lose her husband and her son, and then she would have just given them their gun and let them go away and not pay anything. On the other hand, if they didn't tell those people, when you come in here, if we cannot fix this, you still have a service fee of $25, which is what a lot of people do. Some do that and some don't. If they come in, you're going to pay for them looking at it, and if they can't fix it, you know, they give it back to you in the same condition, broken. But that should be very clear in the policy about what it is that's going to happen on that. So those people probably look very, very poor, and they're probably figuring out, okay, here now, I'm not going to give you any $25. You didn't fix the gun, so why do we need to pay you? If you had fixed the gun, we'd be trying to pay you. But it sounds like they may have a Hatfield-McCoy feud going on there, something other than just that gun incident. So that's just my take on that one.
Okay, can I give this last one? This one is the young man that was in Chicago. Remember a while back, it was the hot topic. We even talked about it on the Lotus Place. Remember the young man that was killed? They said he was mentally ill. He was in college. His daddy called because they said his daddy called the police. He was in fear of his life. When the police got there, they not only killed him, they killed the neighbor upstairs.
Well,
in Chicago. Now they had a breaking news story this morning, and they played the 911 tape. The daddy did not call. The young man called the police twice himself and told the police that he was feared that he was going to be killed. And so they played his 911 tape this morning twice on the news. So to me, this kind of strange. What does he mean that he felt like his life was in danger? They kept asking him, "Where are you, sir? What's going on?" The young man never did reply back. He kept saying, "Send the police quick. Send the police quick. I'm going to be killed. I'm going to be killed." So they trying to say that the lady that took the call, the operator, didn't know how to deal with nobody mentally ill. Now they trying to ship it from the police. That's what they trying to do now. They trying to ship it from the police to the lady that took the call. Because first they said the father called and said the father said he was in fear of his life. But no, it wasn't the father. Now it's the young man. So now they trying to, the young man, he the one called the police. He the one called the police twice. So now they trying to flip the switch. Y'all got to read between the line. I'm like Miss Patty now on this one.
Can I say something?
Now they trying to get the blame off the Chicago police. They trying to say the operator that took the call.
Yeah, hold on. We'll let you talk. Just let her finish.
The operator that took the call, they trying to say she didn't deal with him properly because he was mentally ill. She didn't know he was mentally ill. Now, why are you going to try to put it on her and let the police just off the hook? Now, that's
That's really bizarre. They're flipping the script on that one.
They're flipping the switch. So you'll probably hear it about tonight on the news because that's where they're going with it. I heard it today at 11 o'clock on the news.
Okay, yes. So you wanted to chime in on that or something else?
Yes, I want to chime in on this. This is Clarence from Brooklyn. How are you guys doing?
All right.
Hey there. Look, good to hear ya.
Yes, okay. But listen, the lawyer representing the family said the police officer was 20 feet away from the house. So he said it was like a drive-by shooting. And that the woman that was downstairs, she was asked by the father to be at the door so when the police come, she can let them in, because she was already downstairs. So rather than be truthful, they are such pathological liars. But according to the lawyer, they were 20 feet away from the crime scene. I'm hoping that the lawyer is not only a zealous lawyer, but is a social engineer. There are too many lawyers that's on the opposite side, which are known as social parasites. So we pray.
Absolutely correct.
We pray that it will be, justice will be done. But you see, our people, like Alton Maddox said earlier today on Utrecht Lee's show earlier, he said that until we learn the language of legalese and military science, we're just whistling in the wind. Because we have to know. There is a difference that the white supremacy speaks legalese and military science. We're dealing with forces of evil, sinister forces of evil that have no respect for black lives. And that's why when they say Black Lives Matter, it's a very deep statement, because since we were in this country, we were never considered human beings. That's why they call you nigger, to make you subhuman. These young people that use that terminology, that they don't even understand the origin of the word and what it means back in the days of slavery, where you was never considered a human being. Matter of fact, we're the only ethnic group that's defamed in the Constitution, where it says we are three-fifths. So we got a long ways to go where they try to, like you said, play games now.
Thank you.
Hello.
Interesting. What you were thinking about here today, you know, we have all these issues going on here in this country and the world with African people, and I wanted to touch on and spend some time on what's the answer to the problems. So maybe, Kent, you can tell us, what do you think should be done? What are some of the solutions that need to happen right away?
When you go big game hunting, you have to know the psychology of the hunted. You cannot go big game hunting and don't know the MO of the hunted. Our people don't know what we're dealing with, this monster called white supremacy. Here it is in the year of our Lord 2016, we still don't know the psychology of white supremacy. They've used education, religion, and science to prove that we are subhuman, and that our people have been so psychologically conditioned, be they in the motherland, in this diaspora, or in the Caribbean. How is it possible? Africa could feed the world, and you got children that can't even get clean drinking water in Africa, can't even get a decent plate of food, let alone be able to farm and get their own produce to feed their own people. They said if Africa were to close the borders amongst itself, they would never run out of food or any other thing that they would be trading amongst themselves. But as long as you got non-thinking leaders that only think in terms of what's in it for them and their checking account, they could care less about the masses. That's why the people in Haiti, they are to be so saluted, because they never stop fighting for self-determination. Since January 1st, 1804, they have been fighting for self-determination. They won the independence from France through armed struggle. They defeated Napoleon. And this is something that the white man will never forgive the Haitian people for defeating Napoleon. You got the French doing their mess in sub-Saharan Africa, and God knows how they wanted Gaddafi did, and now they're paying for it, because Libya will never be the same again. Africa right now, from Cape to Cairo, is on fire. And the French can come, the British can come. The Americans have been there with this thing called African Command, called AFRICOM, but their mission is to take down any militant that's for the land and for the people. So, you know, how do you have peace in Africa when Africa being able to establish itself? When you get a military outfit that's willing to take down any militant that wants to defend the land and the people, what more of a patriot can you have than wanting to defend the land and the people? In the Caribbean, you've got all these English-speaking islands, French-speaking islands. The very idea, the same language that the slave master spoke, the blacks speak the same language, but the blacks are not thinking in terms of black advancement. They're thinking in terms of the way they were taught to depend on the white man for their own economical salvation. So Marcus Garvey has never really been taken serious in the Caribbean, even in his own country, Jamaica. You can ask the average Jamaican, can they give you a quote by the most revered countryman? They cannot. So, you know, like our people are foolish people. It says in the Bible, we are foolish people. We don't want to listen to sound doctrine. We are religious, but we're not ethical. And until we can learn the language of the enemy, which is legalese, and military science, we're just playing with ourselves. Because as white supremacy...
Okay. Go on.
No, as white supremacy feels more and more threatened, they will up the ante to continue to control our destiny. And we haven't got a clue as to what we're dealing with.
Okay, I heard a couple of themes out of there, and I want you to just say it. So make it plain and clear. What I heard you say was this, and correct me if I'm wrong. one thing or two or three things we need to do as a people to solve some of these problems that we're having with the police, with the water, with whatever it is. Number one, we need to study the enemy that we're dealing with. That's number one.
That's right.
I heard you say that. Number two,
right.
You said that what needs to happen is self-determination. And then you also said that, what was your other one?
Well, the third position should be culminating with the philosophy of Pan-Africanism. We see ourselves as one people and begin to resolve our issues about this nonsense about being divided by the language we speak, where you come from. It's all nonsense to divide us. It's Pan-Africanism, as Dr. John Henry Clark said, but we're going to perish. He said that before he joined the ancestors. We have not a clue.
Talk to us about Pan-Africanism. Talk with us about what is Pan-Africanism.
Okay,
Pan-Africanism. Explain what that is.
I don't know what that is. All right, Pan-Africanism was started by Marcus Mosiah Garvey, where he gave Africa its colors. It was the red, black, and green. The red for the blood of our people. The black is for the black people. No matter where we are from, we are Africans. And the green is for the land. If you don't preserve and protect the land, you're considered a nothing. And we have the richest continent in the world, and the average black person don't understand that Africa can feed the world. Why do we have poverty in Africa when you see all this rich land that has diamonds, gold, uranium, all these rare earth resources, including the produce, fresh produce? Why is it, you need to really understand, Pan-Africanism is the ability to be for the race. No matter where we're from, we see ourselves as one people. And that has been one of our biggest problems. We always have this attitude about Haitians or Dominicans. Dominicans don't know who they are. A lot of them are still trying to be white. You know, so and Haiti and Dominican share the same island, which is a unique experience, but it's a very divided people amongst the Dominicans. There is a thing where our people in this diaspora, we got to understand that in this diaspora, in this hemisphere, there are more black people in Brazil than the whole United States. And we don't talk to each other. So we have this weird virus that they're telling women down there in Brazil and elsewhere in that part of the world, don't get pregnant, because this mosquito that bites you, it gives you a chance where if you're pregnant, the child will be born deformed. And I've seen some of these babies that are deformed. But what Pan-Africanism is that it gives our people a sense of knowing that we are glorious people. Dr. John Henry Clark said it all. He said, slavery was just a brief interruption of our glorious past. And we have to understand what it means to be seeing ourselves as one people, no matter where we're from, and so that we can talk to each other in a language that we can not try to think big I and little you, but when you're a Pan-African nationalist, you are for the race, for the black people around the world. Now, there are those Africans in the Caribbean, on the motherland, or in Europe. A lot of them got issues with identifying with black Americans. Black Americans have difficulty with identifying with the Africans on the motherland or in Europe or in the Caribbean, and this ignorance is going to be our downfall, because we were taught that hatred by our known enemy, white supremacy. And white supremacy do not like Pan-African nationalism. They don't like it, because they know it is one of the major thorns in its side, and it could become a major Achilles heel if it were to become more and more blacks latching on to the philosophy of Pan-Africanism. That's why when the days when black people was wearing their afros and dashikis, I said, oh, wow, we have began to see the light of Pan-Africanism. But sooner than later, we began changing our hairstyle, going back into this thing about looking like the oppressor's woman or trying to compete with what they say this is how you're supposed to look if you're going to be successful in the world. And they could care a fig about your survival, your well survival. They are about the business of getting to keep suppressing our people. See how they can kill a 12-year-old child and get away with it. The DA didn't even bring it to the jury. So, you know, like we have no leadership to take a stand. Most of your leaders, pastors, most of your pastors are not Pan-African nationalists. Majority are not Pan-African nationalists. They're very bourgeois. They are in the Greek organizations. So, therefore, they are not willing to do anything that's going to upset the apple cart. That's one of the reasons why Dr. King was killed, because he was for upsetting the apple cart. And he had to renounce what the Greeks stood for. He had to deal with the issues of our people's liberation. Because he was a Greek himself, but he renounced all that nonsense and began dealing issues with issues that was affecting our people. So Pan-Africanism is just the ability to fight for the cause of the unborn generation. But now the unborn generation, be they in Africa, in this diaspora, they don't have a future. This word called gentrification is destroying our community. And black people are under the illusion that these white folks coming into your neighborhood were really they're for the brotherhood of man. No, they are not. They're in your neighborhood because it's cheaper for the space. And they can pay pennies on the dollar and begin uprooting you because your landlord, if you're not the landlord, they will begin charging you more for your rent and won't even give you a new lease. So you are kicked out of your apartment and you have nowhere to go because everything else in the neighborhood is unaffordable. Back now, Bed-Stuy, where I live at, I live in the outer perimeter of Bed-Stuy. I live in Fort Greene, but Bed-Stuy is right next door to me, is unaffordable for the average black person in Bed-Stuy. Unaffordable. So Pan-Africanism is a thing where we have to be able to pool in our resources and deal with the fact that we're facing extermination. Our future is not secure. And Pan-Africanism, Pan-African nationalism, is a way that we see ourselves, no matter where we're from, as one people to deal with the same oppressor, same thing in common about what is wrong with our people's plight, with what's going on in our community. That's all it is.
Okay. And what about you, Miss Mississippi? Any solutions? What should we do? What do we need to do?
Say that again, because why was dropping up. Say it again.
What do we need to do? What do we need to do?
Well, we have to, again, we need to have a convention, a Black Power convention. We haven't had a Black Power convention since the early 1970s. That was in Gary, Indiana. We haven't had a Black Power convention to begin strategizing, where do we go from here? Because a lot of black people will cast their lot with Hillary and have not made no concession demands. And there goes back to go with Saunders. Again, no concession demands. We have to have a convention to show where we have come from and where we got to go. And we don't have a clue as to how bad it is because we've been partying too much and listening to nonsense Facebook and tweet, but not dealing with the real issues of why are we surprised that it's an all-white team with the Academy Award. Why are we so surprised? Why are we angry?
Okay.
When we knew
and let me ask you this. Would you be willing to spearhead something like that, a Black Power convention? Would you take the leadership on something like that?
Would I take the leadership?
Would you take the leadership on starting a Black Power convention?
I would love to work with anyone that have the leadership ability to organize our people because, see, I don't feel I could take it on by myself. But with people...
Well, we don't want anybody taking anything on by themselves, but how many people do you need on a team to do a Black Power convention?
I would have to just say for sure 12.
Okay, about 12 people to do a Black Power convention.
Yeah, and really people who will think like Ashira, Dr. Short, yourself, and Mother Dunning, you know, people who are deep thinkers you know, because you see,
understand.
If you cannot, you cannot have someone that has proven to be a bewilderer and have no desire to upset the apple cart. So that would exclude Jesse. That would exclude Shopton. That would exclude.
So where do we? Well, let's stay on this. Let's stay on this Black Power convention right now. Who else are you? Could you think of that's in your local area there too? Because this
how
is the second time
we started.
That's what I'm saying. Just is this? Where is this going to be held at?
Well, it was last held
Brother
in
Brown.
Gary,
Brother Brown.
Yeah. Yeah, but please help for sure, for sure. Lest I forget.
What?
Where could it be held at? It could be in a town that is in need of great help. How about Detroit? How about Detroit? There's a lot of spirits that can be revved up from the time when Malcolm spoke in Detroit. There has been such a great, he gave a little revered speech, the ballot would have.
Okay, we got, you know who we got in Detroit? You know who we got in Detroit? Ron.
Okay.
Brother Ron.
Okay.
Brother Ron. I'm going to call Brother Ron. We're coming to Detroit. Do a Black Power convention.
There you go. There you go. And we will take off from where the great Marcus Garvey said to us, up, you might erase. You can accomplish what you will. You have to have a thing for a passion for Black nationalism, Pan-African nationalism. It's all intertwined. And we have to understand that it's not going to get any better with the new president in the White House. We had high hopes for Obama, but we didn't know who Obama was.
Why we want to look? I don't mean to cut Brother Kent out, but why we always gotta try to look to Obama? Trying to look to him?
Let me answer you. Because he was the first Black president in the United States history that was unheard of, unfathomable, and then when he won key primaries, Blacks began saying, later for you, Hillary. And Blacks crossed over and began listening to Obama. But we didn't know who he was as far as being a centrist. What is a centrist? Black folks didn't know. And when we weren't expecting him to do any miracles, but we expected him to at least right some of the wrongs that was going on, like in Angola, Louisiana, where you got a prison farm. During slavery, it was the biggest slave plantation. Now it's the biggest prison farm. And when you die, you're not able to be moved or be buried where your family wants you to be buried. You have to be buried on the land, on the grounds of that prison farm. You've got the Troy Anthony Davis. All he needed was to have told the president, tell his former Attorney General, Eric Holder, make Troy Anthony Davis' case a civil rights case and take that boy out of jail and make his case a civil rights case. They had no physical evidence, and yet this young man was put to death. I felt so bad because he even took out his older sister who was fighting breast cancer. The cancer was in remission, but because of the aggravation she went through, and they killed her brother, eventually killed her brother, the cancer came back with the vengeance and took her out. We had an Attorney General Holder, and now this attorney, the present Attorney General Lynch, she is not going to do anything to upset white supremacy. You got the case back in Ohio, several cases in Ohio. You got the mess going on in, whoever thought, in the year of our Lord 2016, or started since 2014 probably, when drinking water was known to be poisonous and had people drinking it, ruining the chances of them having healthy children, healthy brains. Who would have thought that this would happen in the United States of America, where people are drinking poisonous water and the powers that be knew it was poisonous? Who would have thought that?
I did. They've always done it. They've even done it to poor whites, so we know we can get it.
Well, what I'm saying is that the black man in
charge. Look at Three Mile Island. Look at Three Mile Island. That was all white.
Yep. Yep. Can't forget. Can't forget. And the idea that, listen, if the automotive, if General Motors stopped using waters that was from the Flint River because it was corroding their parts, why would you want to have your people drinking the water that was corroding the parts to an automobile? That's metal. We don't have metal in our digestive system.
Can I say something real quick?
Go ahead, can't you?
Do you not know the former black mayor that's in jail? It broke last night on Nancy Grace and the other major networks. He's saying that the water have been unclean ever since 2004. He said the governor is a lie. Everybody knew that it had been unclean since 2004. So that broke last night.
This is the former mayor from where?
CNN.
This is the former mayor from where?
In Detroit.
Oh, the former mayor. I know what you mean. I know what you're talking about. Uh-huh. Yeah. See, when he had the ability to do something courageous for his people, he took the money and was glad and could care less about how the consequences of his action. So I know the name when I hear it, but he has done a great disservice to our people. But you've got the mayor of Flint, a sister who has a doctoral degree. I don't know in what. She said she don't want the governor to be arrested. She don't think he should be arrested. Okay. And had Governor Snyder been a black man and was accused of doing the same thing,
his black, they, you know what, would have been under the jail.
Well, he, no, how about he would have been given a choice of rope, cotton, or silk? he would be hung. He would be hung. And you got a black man who was the state emergency administrator that not only cut the water off from Detroit and let the piss people drink poisonous water, he also is running the public system in Detroit. And I understand from what I heard from a reliable source, he taunted the teachers last night at a meeting last night. He taunted them. He said he thought she was being slick by because she won the case in the court that the judge agreed with you. But guess what? You will be working for free come April. But anyway, I told you the money was in there. I ain't going to tell you what happened to the money, but we don't have your money. You don't have your money. You'll be working for free come April. So he is a proud student for the governor.
Well, if Kwame Kilpatrick went to jail, he was the mayor of Detroit. Kwame Kilpatrick, former mayor. Why wouldn't the governor go for same thing? It's basically corruption. Corruption,
sure.
and the deal is, and we're gonna probably get cut off here in a minute because we're out of time. But bottom line is, corruption is corruption, no matter
where it
comes from.
Amen.
But they said today on a news report that Governor Snyder knew it, and as they look at the emails and all the evidence, he was gonna take that. Detroit was going to give him water that was less. First, they thought it was to cut prices, but he wanted to privatize the water and sell it off to the people that wanted the control of the water, which we know who they are, the billionaires. And
friends.
Friends of the billionaires.
That's all Snyder knows, have things cut off and discontinued. But he won't dare tell the rich white folks in Michigan, get to pay your fair share.